Hi, this is Paul Siegel. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. Today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about diseases in D&D and other games. You know, there's been hugely divergent rules for disease over the years in D&D. Have any of them really worked properly? Is it helpful for world building or just an unneeded drag for PCs? All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Before we get into today's topic, I'll remind everyone, as always, that at the end of the show, we'll be hosting our after-party chat. That is a live video chat that Dan and I host on our Discord server, and you can join in by becoming a patron. Visit patreon.com/wanderingdms and join at any tier, and you'll get an invite to our Discord server. Get your account set up over there during the course of the show, and in about 10 to 15 minutes after this show is over, Dan and I will be there to chat with you all live.
We have the best patrons on our Discord server, Paul, and we thank them, including Backrius, for checking in that we're currently live on YouTube and Twitch and Restream. Thank you so much. So, diseases in D&D, some of our acquaintances have been under a little bit of a bug lately. I had a game on Friday that got canceled, actually, as a result. I missed, for one of the only times ever, I missed our house con this year because I had an infection. So kind of thinking about infective type stuff in D&D. And you know what? I'll just come out of the box at the top here and say, as I reviewed all the different editions of D&D for their disease rules this morning, I have never been satisfied. I've never been satisfied by the D&D disease rules. They're so different in different editions, clearly just totally different motivations from a variety of different writers and designers, and they're just all over the map, and I've never been fully happy. I've never really even been really very close to happy with almost any of them, because they all have huge glitches in one way or the other.
This topic, I think, is very interesting just for like how it came up and when it came up. I think you pitched it to me at a time when I was kind of having the exact same conversation with Tanya about the same topic, which is hilarious. And here we are in the 8th season. I guess I was a little surprised we hadn't touched on it yet.
Me too.
Although maybe given how much our show was impacted by COVID-19, I wonder if we avoided it simply due to being traumatized by real-world disease for such a period of time.
Maybe, we've talked, whenever we talk about like undead and mummies, like we start to brush up against it. Isabel and I actually had an episode here on this channel looking at actual medieval literary texts about disease. We weren't specifically talking about the D&D game rules here, but I also had to confirm that we hadn't actually had an episode, you and me, talking about disease. So, and you know what? That theme about like, is it too real? Is it too real, and do you want to avoid it? And that actually might explain some of the weird gaps in the D&D rules over the years, including the current 5th edition. What do we call it? 5.2, 5.5? Is that what we should call it right now? I was very... You won't believe what happens in the current edition of D&D.
Interesting. Interesting.
But let's look at... If we can, let's look at the first one. Okay, so... the first time D&D has disease rules is actually in the second supplement to original D&D, right? That's the Blackmoor supplement by Arneson, heavily edited by Tim Kask. And you know, Paul, sometimes we talk about the fact that your bound version of the original D&D rules for me includes Chainmail, the Little Brown Books, the first supplement, Greyhawk, which we agree is pretty darn useful. It doesn't have supplement tool except for the disease rules, because I personally just printed out the disease rules and those are and pasted them in the back of the book, and that's the only thing from supplement 2 that I have in this text, actually. I felt that was important enough for my game that I actually have. That's the only thing that I added here. And it's interesting because it's the last three pages in Blackmoor. It's the very last thing in that second supplement. And so clearly Arneson, and you know, let me just read a couple bits from the first paragraphs, because I think this reflects where Arneson was coming from to add these. He says, sickness and disease have killed far more people than war, and heretofore this fact has been glossed over. Knowing no allegiance or alignment, disease can strike down the highest level characters as well as non-player characters. When adventuring the outdoors, players run across all manner of disease breeding grounds. And then later on, it should be mentioned that in times of overcrowding, such as sieges foster disease to an alarming rate. And then near the end, it says, please note that the inclusion of disease is optional and primarily concerns the game master, as it is incumbent upon him to determine if the disease exists. So he's clearly in a place where he's kind of thinking about wargaming, right? He's thinking about, well, disease kills many people in war, probably more than the injuries. He's thinking about simulating a siege in a city. And these are all the things that he expects to be happening in his games, I guess. And he thinks it's a real oversight that he's not including these disease factors around war and sieges and stuff.
You know, I think that's so interesting because I think when you boil it down to its impact on a war game, right, I think disease or injury or anything that impacts your health is really just boils down to a simple question of, are you present or not, right? A simple binary of, are you a capable soldier ready to fight or not?
Nice.
And I feel like you can often see that in the rules. Like, I won't be surprised, and I don't have them in front of me, but I won't be surprised if you look at these disease rules and they talk about things like hit points, which I think is not particularly helpful, right? Because if you're doing hit points of damage, most players are going to gloss over that, and they're going to be fine and act normally up until the point that they're at zero hit points, and now they're no longer viable to use in the game, right? Now I'm on the ground and can't perform actions. Whereas I think what I would expect from something that models disease is that it impacts you in weird, unusual ways, dependent probably on the disease, right? Some diseases might make you immobile, or some diseases might make it impossible for you to, I don't know, cast spells, or, right? And I think you see it more and more as the game expands into these areas, right? Where you have more things than just fighting, right? You have social encounters or travel or things like that. Like, I can certainly imagine a character who's very ill, but is capable of getting on a horse and riding around, maybe having a conversation, but can't really do combat.
You might actually like these rules then, Paul, because possibly surprisingly, a lot of what you described is exactly what Arneson injects for his disease rules at the outset of original D&D. And maybe pull up the image just because there's a point or two I could make with them. There's a table here. Again, it runs about three digest pages with details on the different diseases they're going to detail and the generals. So the main thing, so here's the table in Blackmore there with the diseases. And the number one thing I want to point out is that the list is almost, with one single exception, all real world recognizable diseases. So you have, you know, things that would actually be running around in medieval Europe as a problem. You have bubonic plague, you have dysentery, you have cholera, you have smallpox, you have typhus, you have yellow fever, stuff like that, right? And to make a long story short, this is not how they're going to do it in a later edition. They're not going to name actual real-world diseases. And to me, that's a pro. To me, if I say someone's caught the plague, my non-D&D players will immediately recognize it, have an idea what the problem is, and know that they need to hopefully avoid it or something like that. So I think that these are all good things for what the motivation is. The thing that's slightly surprising to me, but maybe satisfies your design criteria, is that it almost doesn't interact with normal D&D mechanics whatsoever. So the diseases have nothing to do with saving throws. They have nothing to do with a character's level. They don't interact with hit points at all. There's no hit point loss whatsoever. What happens is there's just a flat percentage of chance. There's a flat percentage to catch the disease if you're exposed. Doesn't have anything to do with your ability scores. Doesn't have anything to do with your level. Doesn't have anything to do with your saving throws. And if you catch it, and clearly this is Arneson doing real-world research, there's a range of how many days or weeks it takes to incubate and get sick, and then basically you're down. There's a duration, and then there's just a flat percentage chance to die, which is the last column. It's just a flat, you roll a percentage chance, you're either dead or you're not. And then along the way, more or less, while you're sick, you must have bed rest. You must be in bed. And if you refuse to get bed rest, you're losing strength points. Plus a bunch of complications. More or less, that's what happens.
Interesting.
So I like the real world stuff. I like the recognizable names. I respect the real world research on incubation fatality rates. I don't like the fact that, and again, this is kind of like old school DMs of like, haha, you thought you had a high level character with a lot of hit points and you were safe. Nope, this ignores all that and you're just dead if the percentage comes up the right way. So I actually am not super fond of the fact that it doesn't tie into level or saving throws or hit points. I kind of wish those mechanics were synthetic instead of just complete out of left field curveball that they're doing here. So that's probably my main beef about it. And I guess the other thing is, for some reason, they were hyper fixated on the strength score, right? So if you get any one of these diseases and you refuse to go to bed, you're losing strength scores. That's the primary way that they punish you all the time. And I'm like, you know, my wizards aren't going to care a lot. I can still cast spells perfectly fine. And I think that's a little bit of an oversight too.
Yeah, I think we have some, unsurprisingly, Dan, we'll have some differences of opinions here. I see where you're coming from with the real world aspect. However, you know, one of the other major points that I'm going to contrast this with is Warhammer Fantasy RPG, which...
Yeah, great.
Disease is very... Disease has a presence in it. There's a whole section of disease in the book. Maybe I'll just bring that up for you now, Dan, because one of the things that I find delightful about the disease section of Warhammer Fantasy is the name of the diseases. So here we go. We have diseases such as the Bloody Flux, Galcrots, Crutz, Neglish Rot, the Green Pox. And some of these descriptions are, frankly, both horrific and amusing, and really like toe the line, or kind of like get close to the line here of, like, is this acceptable? Put this in your role-playing book, right? Let me read you the description of Crutz. Legend has it that dwarf herdsmen brought down this itching crepuscular rash from the mountains. Maddening, painful, and embarrassing, this sickness tends to gather about the thighs, groin, and torso. Transmitted by touch, this highly infectious rash is quite a social stigma, sometimes associated with goats and other livestock.
Oh. Goat
medicine recommends shaving the afflicted area and painting it with turpentine.
What are they doing with
the goats, Dan?
It's not good. Doesn't sound good to me.
Not great.
Big props to the writers. Yeah. That's impressive.
and then here's the other thing. Like, I would worry about, like, if it goes into the real world stuff is fine for inspiration, right? There's definitely stuff in here. Like, I could read to you stuff about there was one in here that I thought was like, well, that sounds like dysentery, right? So they're certainly inspired by stuff like that. Yeah. But also, if you think of like writing of the era, right, medieval and Renaissance era text, they do have a million names for everything. They don't really understand the medicine behind it at all, right? Part of the, I think, real horror of disease, and I think disease is an area where the game leans hard into that horror aspect, is your body's doing strange things and you don't know why. Right? We don't understand it at all. And so I like that being pushed into the setting by the text.
That's an interesting argument. You know, it's an interesting argument. And sometimes there's a debate you can have between, should you reflect actual medieval understanding or should you reflect like the pulp fiction that the appendix N stuff, right, tends to be kind of scientific and skeptical, actually, at the beginning of the 20th century. Like, they actually specifically will name things scientifically or imply what it is kind of clearly. I think that my instinct is, and I'll say this, third edition D&D started to do the same thing. Third edition D&D has similar fantastic novel diseases, kind of similar to this. They've got cackle fever, filth fever, mind fire, the red ache, the shakes, the slimy doom, stuff like that. And on the one hand, it's kind of evocative, but I feel like you know, you're going to have to spend time training the players as to what this is. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's good.
Maybe, right. Again, I'm reminded of like historical accounts of like someone having the vapors, right? And like, or diseases, like where did that disease come from? Well, obviously a little imp lives in your gizzard, right? Like they're just, the understanding is so weird and so out there. I want that stuff in here. And then the thing I like about Warhammer Fantasy, right, is so basically what it gets into is every disease is custom. Every disease has a section on the effects of that disease. And so they will say, like, so again, in the Kruts, we can say that you get minus 10% to agility and fellowship. And during combat, you must make successful willpower tests each round at the beginning of your turn or spend half an action itching and scratching.
Yeah.
That's evocative. It brings the disease and the manifestation of the disease into the play, right? Where I feel like a lot of the other stuff, it's really just going to become, well, can I act or not? And then we'll forget, like, oh, yeah, you've got a disease. And we won't describe it in any detail. We won't see its impact on your life, right? I feel like that's a loss, I think.
That's a pretty strong argument. And I was interested to see that by the point of 5th edition D&D, the current rules, you're kind of in that same boat of the diseases are all custom. Here in original D&D and first edition, you have a system. You have a system for diseases that the diseases all tie into. And as of fifth edition now, they're basically all custom, like you say, about Warhammer, and they just get some examples. You get like three examples in fifth edition, and the claim is, you know what, you can make up other diseases, use these as templates, that's on you. It's not totally insane. It's not completely crazy.
Again, I like to be inspired by the real world, and then let me give you this example. Here's why. At breakfast yesterday, as I was talking to my partner Tanya about what should be our topic, she brought up this. She didn't quote it as disease, but specifically over the weekend, she had a bout of vertigo. She is prone to BPPV, which is not a thing that I've ever encountered in my life. And frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if people who have this suffer with it for very long periods of time because it's so misunderstood. And she happened to only know about it really well because she is a physical therapist and so treats it. But basically what happens is a little bit of crystallized calcium dislodges in your inner ear and floats into the liquid into the canals of your inner ear. And so you have a little fleck of solid matter floating around there in your inner ear. And if you then say roll over or move your head in different ways, gravity affects that little speck, and it totally screws up your sense of equilibrium to the point of like rapid, horrible dizziness, throwing up, terrible nausea, because the whole world is spinning.
I was like, watching an old episode of House where this happened. I was watching an old episode of House yesterday where this was actually part of the
fascinating. Part of the plot. Wow. It is so fascinating because also the treatment is insane, right? This can last for like weeks or months as your body then slowly reabsorbs the crystal. However, there's a treatment, which is a maneuver. It's literally move to this position, wait 3 minutes, move to this position. You're rotating your head. You're leaning in this direction. It's horrifying for the person because the whole world's spinning while they're doing it because it's exacerbating the symptoms. But the end result is it's like playing one of those little games you had as a kid with like liquid maze and the bubble.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Exactly that. And you're just getting it the hell out of your, and the moment it's out of your inner ear, boom, you're better.
It's over. You're done. Terrifying.
It is great.
I hope she's okay at the moment. I hope she's okay right now. Oh my god.
She's out mountain biking.
That's insane.
Like literally, that's how fast it appears and disappears. It's so crazy, right? It's like it's horrific and then it's gone. It's so bizarre, right?
Yeah.
And so like I love just the weird like customization or oddness of that, and then just like the misunderstanding, like cuz as she said, she treats people with this and she's like Yeah, people will come in, they've been dealing with it for weeks, and just they have doctors who don't know what the hell it is. I don't know. There's no medical explanation for it, right? I don't have medicines or surgeries I can do to fix this. And she's like, go to the PT. Because, you just do these couple maneuvers and you're better.
Crazy.
It is wild.
And it was asking that is me, what happened on the house table.
Does this have any presence in role-playing games?
Yeah.
And her point that she made was, you know, a lot of times, even in medical text, what they'll call it is a dizzy spell, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, is there a spell in D&D that does this to someone?
Well, now there is.
Wow.
Now there is.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, and I could see using it maybe as like, you could twist, like this could be a wonderful or horrible variation of, say, a whole person spell. Well, you're not paralyzed, but you can't freaking move, because if you do, you're going to curl up in a ball and throw up.
Nice. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, like a really nasty whole person. I will say, so just as and I think maybe the lesson for this discussion is that diseases vary so wildly, right? So that's something that can be cleared up in a couple minutes if you know the right trick. Is that they do vary widely, and maybe you can't guarantee that you're going to have some kind of master system for all diseases. I will say, again, for me, like my instinct for a medieval role-playing games, I kind of wish that the core rules started with real stuff, with a sword, with a horse, with a saddle, with the how fast you can walk. And I kind of wish that you had like, here's some real world diseases to begin with as kernel, and go, here's how we can handle these reasonably, and then use them to spin out more fantastical stuff if you want. It would be my design preference. I don't mind the campaign specific fantastic stuff, but I kind of wish we could, like, as a test run, like, can we model this real stuff, and how would that work?
That's fair, right? And I think the other reason you see this come up so much in Warhammer Fantasy is one of the four gods of chaos, one of the major evil powers in the world, is the god of disease. And so you, like, in this list of diseases, we have Neglish Rot, which comes from the god Nurgle. And that's its origin is completely magical. It's 100% a horrible, horrible curse, right? From the powers of chaos. So I like that it's super tied into the setting, but like, wow, now we're as far away as you can get from like real world stuff, right?
Yes.
Maybe the symptoms it's evoking are similar, but like really it is the manifestation of that crazy assumption, medieval assumption, right? Of like, oh, you know, a demon is playing tricks on your bile or something, right? And like, no, in this case, that's really what's happening. You know, you spent too much time with demons, and now you have this horrible thing.
You know, I
can see what you're Arison's saying about wanting.
Yeah.
All right, go on.
And I'll say, so in Arison's list, there's one single entry there that's not real. He's got near the bottom of the table there, he's got an entry for advanced leprosy, and that's noted as the social disease afflicting all mummies. So previously, so, and that's totally different from what's in the prior book, but what happens, advanced leprosy, you get hit by a mummy, 100% chance that you caught it, no way to avoid it. And what the text says is it's a social disease, interesting, afflicting all mummies. This is what causes the wounds to take longer to heal. It is automatically contracted on contact with a mummy. If not cured within 3 days, there's a 95% chance of fatality, decreasing 2% each day. Any character that succumbs to this dread disease may not be raised from the dead. They're permanently dead. So advanced leprosy, right? And what I would point out is that in later editions, they took away the name leprosy, right? Same kind of effect, but they didn't feel like they wanted to call it leprosy anymore, like they've got it here.
Yeah, that's interesting. I love that it's described as a social disease. Is that in the same way that ruts is a social disease? What are you doing with the mummies that you shouldn't be doing?
Question mark? It's like a really weird, odd wording.
I guess one of the things I do like about that, though, is this implication of like it is physically apparent and misunderstood by the populace enough that you might get shunned, right? Like, oh God, you know, who's this person walking around with, you know, mummy rot or the crutz or whatever? You're not allowed in the tavern, sorry, right?
And later, in first edition, they make it start to take away charisma points. They actually don't have that right here, but they start wiping out your charisma points. Which seems like a description of leprosy, like seems a reasonable model without calling it leprosy. So I can get behind that.
And that's what I like about having custom mechanics per disease, right? Because every disease manifests in a different way. And some diseases are totally debilitating and make you curl up in a ball, but you look fine. And other diseases, you know, you look absolutely miserable, but you're still functioning. But maybe you're going to get shunned. at the town gate because you've got boils all over your face or something.
This is a good point. Yeah. This is actually a pretty good point.
Yeah. I like that stuff.
Let me talk about another way
I've used disease in my games, because this speaks to this a little bit. I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but I use disease or a disease in the past, and sickness in general, as a means of excusing player absenteeism. I started in a game I ran a decade ago, and I still use it to this day. I use it in my quest game, right? If a player is not present, right, I don't want to deal with, like, your character disappears or somebody else plays your character or, you know, any of that stuff just doesn't feel good. So I just say, you get sick, right? Because that happens. That's a realist. Yeah, I don't know what happened. See, he was fine a moment ago, and now he's throwing up in the corner. And it answers so many questions. It's nice to have be rooted in that sense of, like, I had one character who's a wizard, and the party sure wants to be able to detect magic on this thing, but the player who plays the wizard is out. Oh, can we ask River to cast a detect magic spell for us, even though his player isn't here? And I can just quickly rule that and say, well, you ask him, and he looks at you, and he leans on your shoulder, and he throws up on your shoes. And then he mutters an apology and curls up on the ball. Right? I'm like, okay. But also, like, but I'm able to do little things like, oh, do we need to, like, does it totally screw up the game? Do I have to build a stretcher and carry him around? No, he can shuffle around. He leans on you. He's really not feeling well. It's clear he's not well, but he's still mobile, right? If something life-threatening shows up, he can run away for a little while.
That's good. That's good. And I was doing kind of the same thing in my 2-year Star Frontiers campaign last year. In my D&D games, I try real hard to, like, you're in town, you go to the dungeon, you come back to town at the end of the day to get over issues like that. But with the Star Frontiers game, you're abandoned on a wilderness planet. There isn't any safe space. Mm-hmm. So I did the exact same thing as I was like, you got heat stroke, right? On the horrible burning desert planet. So people were getting heat stroke and not available the exact same way. Yeah. That works very well.
It's a real nice mechanic for that.
And it does evoke, right? It does evoke, like, a dangerous world with, like, random kind of scary stuff. It's not a terrible theme to inject there at that point.
Yeah, and I do like that it brings it into the world in as arbitrary a way as disease actually feels in real life, right?
Yeah.
Like, I guess the other question I want to ask is, right, if you want rules for disease, well, why? Like, how does a player catch a disease? When is that coming up in your?
Well, this is really good, and I want to, so, like, here in, like, that first paragraph that Arneson wrote says, it's up to the game master to decide if disease exists, and anytime you run into a place where it exists, you've got to deal with that percentage to catch from exposure, but this isn't, you know, this isn't the first time that I, Dan, ran into disease rules in D&D, and I think I want to look at the first edition rules, because that's the first place I ran into it. Totally different kind of metaphor, I guess. So this would be the thing with the orange dot, I guess. Yeah, okay, so here is, now, disease for Arneson was the very end of his Blackmoor rules. Interestingly, here we're looking at the first edition Advanced D&D DM's Guide from 79, written by Gary Gygax. And interestingly, this disease section is nearly at the front of the book. It's one of the very first things in the first edition DM's Guide. You get this section that starts with PC ability scores and then how they age, right? Aging out. And then there's disease. And the next page after that is player death. Mm-hmm. So it's almost at the front of the book. And you can see that there's this contraction of disease general rule here. It says, for each game month, you may wish to check each character to determine whether or not he or she is contracted to disease. It's just a flat, you need to check each month. Now, but maybe you should check each week if the conditions are particularly favorable, which would be one, in all caps here, very hot weather, or hot moist weather. So you're traveling through a jungle adventure or something like that. Or two, filthy crowded conditions in warm weather, like maybe a siege actually. And then in addition to that, you need to check each and every time a character is actually exposed to a carrier in a way that they could communicate the disease, note that disease can be almost anything in the universe. And then you get a fairly sizable table with a base chance of 2%, a whole bunch of modifiers, sieges, where is that, add 1%, actual carrier of disease adds 10%. If it's cold, maybe it's off by 1%. So this is the first time that I, Dan, ran into, right, when I got the DM's guide long before I had original D&D, was I saw this and I was like, oh, how interesting. Like we're basically modeling a whole medieval ecosystem. And I thought that I was supposed to do this every month, just roll a random chance for disease modified by where the characters are. And you just might get a horrible debilitating disease entirely by random, entirely unavoidably. Doesn't have anything to do with your ability scores. There's no saving throw. And yeah. I was like, oh, very interesting. And this kind of feeds into like a monthly upkeep cost that players are supposed to pay to feed themselves unless they have a fortress or something like that. And, you know, when people talk about disease being fundamental to Warhammer fantasy roleplay, like my first take on D&D was that, oh, you have to confront this every single month. There's all kinds of diseases in the world. Yep. And I thought that this is how you ran D&D. And it still is kind of baked into some of my neurons. Wouldn't that be a kind of interesting simulation to run?
This is evidence, I think, that no one should ever be surprised to know that Gary worked as an insurance adjuster. Right? Like, this is show me that you studied actuarial science in your hobbies.
What a great idea. What a great point. What a great observation.
Right. Now, like, really? Yeah. I mean, it's an interest. I guess it's, yeah, I want to apply societal statistics to my players. But there's no way in hell this ever went over. Like, I don't know. Did you do this, Dan? And if so, how did your players react?
I did. Poorly.
And how did the players react?
Poorly.
Because I think I know.
Not great. Before I get off this, I mean, I'll never get off this because this is actually always this is the substrate of my understanding of disease in D&D, is that I have snipped out of this page a whole separate section on parasitic infection, because that's a separate and distinct table percentage chance and monthly roll. You're also supposed to make a separate monthly check for parasitic infection, which is a totally separate thing from disease here. And then the other interesting thing that's unique, if we go to the next, can you go to the yellow slide for me? So totally, and this is a place that I am critical of Gary, frankly. I have a blog post. There's a link to my blog post in the YouTube description here. So he doesn't have real world names like Arneson did. He removes the recognizable real world stuff. He doesn't have any names at all. There's no names of the disease. There's just a package of categories that you roll on this table for what organ system the disease hits. Is it your ears? Is it your gastrointestinal system? Is it your respiratory system? And then there's a roll for acute or chronic. Does it just happen once or does it happen continually? And then there's a separate roll for severity, right? And basically, mild means you're just down and inactive. Severe means you're losing like half your hit points, and terminal means you're going to die. An interesting number of permutations. I guess there's hundreds of different combinations, I guess, of organ and occurrence and severity, I suppose, but there's actually no recognizable name for it. And for me, this is a kind of classic Gary advanced D&D. He over abstractized things, right? I want a name that I can recognize and identify and have a visceral connection to. And this kind of abstract package of things that you can reskin, I guess, if you want to, is putting more labor onto the DM to make these things nameable. And I personally think that that's a little bit of a failure there.
Yeah, it's a pretty far cry from Warhammer's Galloping Trots and the yellow pock, right? Like, That is fascinating.
I guess different organs have different effects. So at least like some are going to penalize your strength. Some will penalize your dexterity. Some will penalize your intelligence, if I recall. That's cool. That's not terrible. But the overarching system is like,
yeah. 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 It's a bit much.
Trying to cover anything.
I still want to go back to like, how this even manifests in your game. I keep using that word, but okay, how this appears in your game. I don't think, you know, societal statistical analysis and percentage rolls is good. I think that's terrible, right? That's at that point, you might as well just boil down to like, well, what's the probability you make it to sixth level? And let's just roll the dice and see if you do or not. And you don't have to bother with this whole adventure nonsense, right?
So, but what if the math is too hard? Yeah, absolutely. You need to play through it. Maybe the math is just too hard to get to sixth level.
No.
We need to simulate it. We need to run that.
But I do like seeing it show up, right? Like, and then I want to show up in the story element of the game, right? Warhammer solves this by Nurgle being a major villain, you know. But you could certainly play with this in a variety of ways. Again, it happens to be Warhammer because I think Warhammer steeped in this stuff. But there's a great Warhammer adventure that I have tucked away somewhere called The Cure is Worse Than the Disease, and it's a whole plot built around. Somebody has an embarrassing disease and they're trying to hide it. And that's the whole plot of the game is like trying to find out. I think the setup is actually that you're a bunch of thieves trying to break into somebody's manor house to steal some goods. But actually there's this whole underlying subplot of the lord of the castle or the manor is very diseased and trying to hide that. And so there's just little, just trickles out into the adventure in wonderful and horrible ways.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah. So I guess that's what I want. I want monsters or traps or things that incorporate disease, right? Right. Yeah. The mummy rod is not bad, right? Yes, it's a mummy. We have to fight it, but also like cover your face because you don't want to get the mummy rod, right? I like it getting incorporated into the gameplay in some way.
I'm used to having, you know, it's actually not an original D&D, but I don't mind having your giant rats have like a 1 in 20 chance of hitting you with a disease. I'm used to seeing there. Isn't terrible. A trap like spikes that are also diseased on the points is not terrible.
I mean, I think it would be a funny adventure hook to give to players of like, I need you to go find the MacGuffin. Where is it? It's in this empty town that's completely been obliterated by plague.
I mean, definitely.
Oh God, how do we get in there and retrieve the thing without getting plague? That's great.
Yeah, definitely, you'd want that there. I could even see it is a point. Like another, on the one hand, my heart actually really does want this monthly stimulated chance for disease. But on another day, look, another day's Dan will say, I do want reasonable choices in front of the players. So I do want things that are allowing the players to engage with some kind of choice. So, and if a ghoul runs up to a new player, I will say, you know, their claws are clearly dripping with some kind of horrible thing that you want to avoid. I try to make those things clear before they get surprised by something. So similarly, I guess if I went with that same instinct, I could put particular places, like maybe even a really nasty jungle, and put it in front of them. You know, if you go here, it's known that a lot of people come out infected with disease. What are you going to do to prepare for that? Would be, so if I make areas of my campaign world, like your town, that's a known hotspot, that probably is better engagement on part of the players. Yeah.
Yeah. My fear with the whole, like, you know, just statistical, whatever, you happen to be in this space over in downtime, we're going to make a roll, is it reminds me a lot of a time when I was playing with like the Escape the Dungeon tables, where if you want to end every single session back at town and the game session ends and they didn't make it back to town, then we have to go to these tables and roll to find out what happens. And then there's a chance that the players simply die. And I've never had a player completely flip out on me. Like absolute table flip, I'm never playing this game. Like that situation where I had a player roll on that table. What do you mean my character's just dead because of a bad roll on a table? Yeah. Even though I'm like, well, it's a calculated risk you took, right? You decided to stay in the dungeon too long. You knew the timer was in play. He was still like, nope, screw this game. I'm never playing it again. It's awful.
That's rough to hear. I'm sorry that happened to anybody, obviously, and that's a lesson that we can learn from. Frankly, that's a
That was my expectation when I was asking, how did your players react? I assume table flips, how they react. What do you mean I have a disease? It's totally arbitrary and stupid. It's not my fault. I didn't do anything. Why am I being penalized?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't table flipping bad, but it was because, again, it's not instant death. The sickness incapacity lingers for possibly weeks or months, so we get to play through that instead. And it's kind of a long, drawn-out trauma instead of instant surprise. So, I mean, I guess that's a good thing, right?
I guess. Does that lead to fun play? This is a game, right? Like, at some point, I'm going to go, like, we are playing a game, right? The goal here is to all have a good time, playing a fun adventure game together.
I don't think so. That doesn't sound right.
Oh goodness.
Now let me just check just about some stuff that happens in other editions without going through the details. I checked out second edition again. I'm not super familiar with second edition AD&D, and I think they might have just glitched up because the DM's guide doesn't have any rules for diseases, and it just says, well, the monster manual has all the details that you need, and then the monster manual doesn't. And so like if I look up the rats in second edition, it says the rats have a 5% chance of infecting its victim with a serious disease. End of sentence. That's it. And I'm like, well, what does that imply? I don't know what that means. And there's nothing in the DM's guide. So I think they might've just like accidentally failed to bring in disease rules or something like that. And then, you know, third edition, like we said, does have, I'll praise their edition, that their disease rules do sink into standard mechanics. So you get exposed to a disease. There's, I think, a constitution save, I think is what they have there. And then it can do hit point damage, or the different diseases can do ability score damage over some time. I think the mechanics are well thought out. Again, they're all fantasy stuff, all entirely fantasy stuff, which is not my favorite. And then fifth edition goes to the point where they kind of get rid of the system. They have a couple, they just give you three examples. It's basically fantasy stuff. And again, you get con saves. They can either, the three examples, do damage or exhaustion or blinding, actually. And here's the funny thing that I noticed with the 2024 edition of the rules is that they pretty much expunge the word disease. So they clearly tried to get rid of the word disease, and now those three examples they have the same three examples, but they don't call them diseases anymore. They're now magical contagions. As far as 5.5 and a half goes, there isn't any normal diseases in the world, I guess. There's only some magical contagions, including the sewer plague, which is just like what you'd get from a rat, I guess. And there's only the one single place where the word disease still exists is in the name of the spell Detect Poison and Disease. But the text of that spell says that it detects poisons and contagions, because diseases doesn't exist in the system anymore. And I kind of think that's interesting when a game system gets to a point where, like, this is so troublesome, we're going to entirely get rid of it, right? They did that with Polymorph in the third edition rules. They grappled with it, they fought it, and then you just say, you know what? Polymorph is gone. We errata its existence out of the universe. And they've kind of gotten to this. Disease is apparently so troublesome. Like, this whole issue is so troublesome and naughty that I guess the current D&D designers have just said, you know what, we don't have diseases anymore, which I think is interesting.
Yeah. Oh, it's disappointing, but I guess I see, like, again, I think I can see where they're coming from, and just in terms of, like, it is really hard to systemize, right? Like, disease is so varied. And so different. Every single one's going to be this special case. And if you're not willing to do that, and you're trying to systemize everything, then you're going to run into problems. Right? Gary tried.
Another question that I have is this possibly partly a sensitivity issue, right? Because obviously this edition has come out after, you know, post COVID. You know, maybe I'm not tied into communities that are particularly triggered by that. Maybe, I don't know. I have no knowledge one way or the other about that, but I wonder if, just the same way that we had to get rid of the naming leprosy as the thing that mummies do, maybe we just don't want to have even any mention of disease in our rules now, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there is that problem, right, of like introducing a real world thing brings along all our biases. If there's stigma attached to it, then, you know, maybe it brings out some bad takes at the table. And then in turn, that can be very hurtful to somebody who's actually legitimately quietly dealing with that problem. Mm-hmm. Right. Like that's, I could see that. I could see that.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, this is useful.
I'm going to take a left turn here, Dan, because there's an interesting comment here in the chat that I want to share. This comes from Backwius, who asks, oh, now I've lost where it was right in front of my face, and I can barely see that text. But basically is asking, should it take level or hit dice into account, or is disease the great equalizer, i.e. do frost giants get the sniffles? which I think is really interesting and fun, because I actually think that is a great way to incorporate disease into the game. Is you could use it as a way to say, take a traditionally very difficult monster and scale down its difficulty, right? So for example, if you wanted to say, put a green dragon in a very low level game and you make it like horribly sick so that it's wheezing and coughing. And, you know, I think I see Dan nodding. I'm not sure if you're putting together. This is one of our dungeon design dashes.
Right.
We wrote this.
Yeah. Quality pedigree checks out.
Yeah. So, in Dungeon Design Dish number 5, we did exactly that. The infested perch of the mammoth egg includes a green dragon who is very sick. And one of the nice things too is that lets you kind of broadcast the presence of the creature. You can hear it. Yeah. You can. It coughs and wheezes. We've reduced its viability as a monster, right? So that now a level 1-3 party maybe can take on a green dragon because he is quite sick. I think that's interesting. I think that's fun to play with. So why wouldn't you? So I guess I would say, yes, it is the great equalizer. And yeah, that's enjoyable. I don't know. What do you think, Dan? Do frost giants get the sniffles?
Well, I mean, that wasn't the take that I was going to take on Backwiz's question there. I mean, that's great. Again, it's like a DM fiat thing to scale up or down monsters. You know, undeniably a great technique. You know, I think we also use that for some hags in the Scarlet Stockade adventure that we wrote too. And I think that it's like, as far as a system of like, do you need to make saves or something like that? My instinct is to say yes to Backwiz's question that, and this is the thing that I actually have a problem with in Arneson's rules and Gygax's first edition rules, is that it doesn't connect to the rest of the system. So I want it to be synthetic with saving throws and hit points and hit dice, and for that stuff to make a difference is my instinct. And we know that there are more robust people in the world, and there are immunocompromised people in the world that are more subject to infection or things like that. And I kind of want to simulate that through your natural ability scores and levels and stuff like that. There might have been a point in my distant history where I also thought it was clever for things like diseases or heat or starvation to cut through people's hit points and be like, ha-ha, you're not protected against this. But I do think if I embrace like the pulp fiction literature that, you know, Conan will, you know, not, you know, will be more robust to all of those things, to disease, heat, starvation. He's going to be able to somehow make a melee attack even while he's bound up after days of dehydration. So
do you want both the chance to catch the disease as well as the effects of the disease? Because I could see doing the former and not the latter, right? Like very similar to say how we have save or die, or you know, spells like hold person, you know, stuff where like, yes, a higher level character is maybe going to be less likely to get hit by it, but once you're hit by it, you're dead. Save or die.
It's really interesting that you say that, because that's what you just described is what I currently have written for my OED house rule. And I was looking at it and I was like, am I really happy with that? I'm not totally sure I'm happy with that. But currently what I've got jotted in for the OED judges book is you get a standard saving throw to avoid being infected. And then once you are infected, you start taking strength damage. I'm kind of trying to honor Arneson's rules for original D&D, frankly, in that. And then you start taking strength damage, and obviously that doesn't affect your level. But the initial, I do give an initial saving throw with, I guess, with the exact same instinct when I jotted that down. So that actually is what I have for OAD at the moment. Maybe it's not as bad as I thought.
I'm not sure if that's arguing for or against it being an equalizer. It kind of on one side, yes, and on the other side, no, right?
Well, like you said, your level helps with the saving throw to be infected. And then once you're infected, you're kind of in the same basket with it's going to be attacking your approximately 10 strength.
Yeah.
I guess that's what I must have been thinking about when I did that. I feel like a saving throw. I mean, you got to have a saving throw. I mean, I do feel like I'm pretty committed. Like something bad tries to hit you when I'm running OD&D, you're going to get a saving throw. That's just part of the thesis of the system. So I feel like not having a saving throw is just like, just rubs me the wrong way.
It makes sense. I mean, I will say, looking at the Warhammer rules, while every disease has different effects on you based on what the disease type is, there is unified rules for how you catch a disease, and it begins with a toughness test. You take a toughness test to avoid contracting it, and then you take a second toughness test to see how long it lasts. Right, and then I think all of them have a variable duration, but the toughness test will modify that duration one direction or the other. But still, nonetheless, your toughness is a stat that is changing over time. The more powerful characters have better toughnesses, or less likely to contract the disease, maybe more likely to throw it off more quickly than others. But the net result of having caught it, and once you got it, you got it.
Yeah. Well, I think I can live with that, and I think I am trying to honor generally in Arneson's rules in first edition, even in third edition, right? The most common damage once you get it is to attack your strength ability. So I'm maintaining that. And, you know, I'm recalling, Paul, that I think it was last week in our after chat, we actually had a very interesting reasoned debate for a couple minutes about how people feel about giving ability scores to monsters, specifically strength to giants. And one of our very experienced DMs was saying he doesn't like giving strength scores to like a giant. Like a giant should have its own, 10 strength on average, but that means something different for giants. And my opinion is I do like being able to apply strength scores to actually make decisions about if you are wrestling, if you are opening a giant door. And again, it would help us here that your frost giant would have a larger strength score and be more resistant to some kind of disease when they catch it. I'm pretty comfortable with that. That seems pretty elegant to me.
I don't want a single unified stat for that. Like some diseases should modify your strength, sure. Other diseases should modify your charisma. Some diseases should. I like this one disease in Warhammer that screws with your action economy. Right, you're so itchy. You do less things every round because you have to make a check every round or spend half your round scratching yourself. I like the variation. I wouldn't want to just say across the board strength.
I mean, I totally agree. By default, for the couple of real world diseases that I'm looking at, which is, yellow fever or the plague or something like that, I think it's a reasonable starting point. And then if you want to be more creative about it, of course, 100% do other stuff.
But how would you rule things like, so basically by attacking the strength score, you're still kind of saying that like, well, a wizard can cast spells until they die of the disease.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Not going to impact their ability to cast magic in any way.
That is true.
Yeah. And I think that's disappointing, right? Like, depending on the disease. In some diseases, that makes sense. Yes, he's wasting away reclined on his sofa, but he can still wave his hands and cast his magic, sure. And then in other cases, half the time he tries to cast a spell and gets a hacking cough and it screws it up.
Yeah. Please let me. I'm rereading my very very brief house rules here about whether I expected to continue to do that, because again, for Arneson, you have to go to bed. You only lose strength if you do something active. It's a good point. I do think that when they did rely for, I agree with you, when they relied only on strength, it overlooked a lot of stuff. I like the Gesh spell, right? In original D&D, it just says if you violate the oath of the Gesh, right, your top level spell there, you get weak. And then in first edition, what the detail they gave that to was strength points. And same problem. Yep. It's not actually reducing the effectiveness of your wizards, which I've had problems with games in. So that was a bit of a an oversight at the beginning.
Well, then we are about out of time. You have any final thoughts on disease?
I'm still not, we've never had really satisfying disease rules in D&D, and I'm really bemused by the current fifth edition saying it's so troublesome, we're not going to call anything disease anymore, which is really interesting. Now, so for me, I'd like something that could handle, by default, real-world recognizable diseases. I could just throw, this is leprosy. And people would, and we could handle it, and people would know what that is. I'd like kind of simple mechanics that do, like Backreese's question, do tie into the rest of the system, like saving throws and levels and stuff like that. Really interesting that no edition of D&D ever really dialed it in. My instinct is to have it to be a fundamental part of your grim medieval world, you know, kind of in the same bucket as Warhammer, actually. So I'm impressed that Warhammer Fantasy has managed to make that an important part of the game. I wish we'd been able to do that for D&D.
Yeah. I think I certainly want it present. I think I agree. Warhammer incorporated into the setting really well, which is enjoyable. I think I want to resist systemizing it though. I feel like disease is such a wide span of things. It covers so much. Kind of don't want a standard mechanic for it. I wouldn't mind seeing adventures that say, yep, this disease is present in this adventure and it operates in this way that's totally unique and different from every other disease.
I don't mind that. At the minimum as an addition, as icing on the cake, that you can do that. I do wish there was something that handled real world diseases in a reasonable model. I don't think we
have it. Viewers, if you have an opinion on, or you know, other systems that have handled disease in an interesting way that we're not discussing here, you'd love to hear us talk about, or specific cases of how disease have impacted your game, we'd love to hear from you. Leave a comment here in the YouTube video, and Dan and I will possibly incorporate that into a future show.
Absolutely. And of course, remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We are on YouTube and Twitch and Facebook and TikTok and Loops and GitHub. We have the handle Wandering DMs everywhere, so please look for us there and palliate that like button.
If you prefer to listen to the show in audio-only podcast format, you can do so. Those files are available on our website at wanderingdms.com. Also through various podcast carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Pocket Cast. If you're listening to this show right now on one of those sites and it gives you the ability to do so, please consider giving us a 5-star review. That helps other listeners find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. And of course, huge thanks to our patrons who support the show here. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. Like Paul said earlier, every tier gets you access to a private Discord server where we do have the most intelligent, wise, and charismatic patrons in all the land conversing about these and other issues and fantasy games and new D&D and horror games and miniature construction, all that kind of stuff all the time, 24/7. We would love to have you join us there. And in about 10 minutes, we will be there for the live video after chat. And I know there's a lot of great ideas in the chat that's come by that I haven't got an opportunity to see. So hopefully people can share your ideas about the right way to dial in disease in the D&D your games. And we will be there in a couple minutes. So don't forget that we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And we hope you'll join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you.